session number 9339, reel 17.
Mr. William Holbrook, Reel 18. Yeah. You were telling me about how you were acting as a runner from Delville Wood. Could you continue?
That is the runner, was running, yes. Well, because as I was going down, taking his message down to Carmel, Carmel Valley, by the way, was the headquarters of the British Army on the Somme, put it up. And I've been down with his message, so I met another fellow going creeping down, and we came to a sunken road. And you'd never believe it. In this road, there was nine dead. All British troops, I suppose as many as over 100, all died thick in this row, they're dead. So it must have been shelled there, and nobody ever found them. They was all black with the sun. And I remember one fellow, of course, I had a look, and one fellow, I'll never forget, he was lying on the stretcher, this fellow was dead, lying on the stretcher, with one leg off. And dead on each hand was another man. Four men came in down in this way. They were dead. They'd fallen down and hit probably by the same cell. And they would say there's four fellows dead, one on each hand, holding the stretcher, and a dead man lying on it. And I remember another fellow I saw that his leg had been cut here, so that
right all, above the ankle.
All that flesh up here, right up, was all lying like a lot of loose flesh, and his bone was all bare. But terrible. I don't know if that must have been found. I bet it was years after they were found, because there was so much beyond our front line. I suppose a mile or 2 miles. Well, when I got back to the regiment, I didn't go back to the office anymore. My dad got released the same night. So next night, so they don't go back. And you might as well don't go back and come back again. So wait there to the night, and the regiment coming out, which they did. We stayed there about, I said, a night or 2 nights, perhaps. And then we were sent up to another part of the Somme, High Wood. That was on the left, between the Somme and the anchor, that way on the left, of Ypres. And there, we held the trenches there. They were advanced trenches, not very deep. And they were the first we got. The Germans had been driven back on the Somme front. And been back about 3 or 4 miles. Of course, whoever our general was thought they were on the retreat, thought the Germans were going back for good. They sent the Indian cavalry, there was Indian cavalry out in those days, Deccan horse and Bengal lancers. They come up with a bus in there, I suppose, 200. Yeah. Ready to drive the Germans back, so we got to Berlin, I reckon. So, way they got over the top. And you've never seen anything like it. Within half an hour, they came back. They was wounded. I don't suppose half of it came back. One leg off, and then they just managed to get the rest of fall down dead and lying between. Never seen anything like it. Are they? I don't suppose half of it doesn't escape. Got back the Indian cavalry. I think that's the last time they ever used them.
You didn't see them attacking. You just saw them going out and then coming back.
What, the cavalry? No, they went through us. I think it went somewhere about a mile and a half. Think that the Germans gone back to Berlin, I think.
Did you think that when you saw them going forward, did you think the cavalry would be successful? Or?
Half and half. I didn't quite know. I'd never seen them before in action. Well, except for the Street of Mons. I hadn't seen their cavalry in action before. They didn't use them much. But when I saw them before, they riderless horses, two men on one horse to get a wound. I don't suppose one man horse got through their lines, all driven back. And that was the last time they used cavalry. Well, we were there another 2 days, I suppose, and we were withdrawn. I don't know, some other men took over the bus. We went back to left the anchor between Somme and Passchendaele. That way we went there, on the edge of Passchendaele. Mud there, there's mud, because I don't know if you can get through it. Fellows that got wounded there, Oh, is that one of VC there? One of the New Zealanders, captain.
This is the Passchendaele in the Ypres sector, is it? You went up.
Yes, this is between Passchendaele and the Somme, that part of the front. But the anchor was really the front anchor front. They called the Battle of the Anchor. They called it. Anyway, that was.
What months was this that you went there?
That would be about October.
So you'd been on the front, in and out of the Somme battles throughout July. Weren't you getting very battle fatigued, or were you getting very battle fatigued?
I don't know. I did, because the men kept coming out. So I extremely fortunate. I can't remember. Anybody that came away with it, that came out with me, that came back from the me. I remember like fellows that got killed there, and one chap, I don't know if I've ever talked about this, I knew a lot of fellows then, being like going out with the regiment, I knew a lot of people on the headquarters staff, you know, the transport staff, and the cooks and that sort of thing. So at the end of going, I go around and say, Patsy, by the eyes, and I said, Patsy, got anything you don't want? And so we say, what might it sound? So we eat, and he gives me what's left over, you see, like the officers. Then, so this particular day, we was going up to the Somme, this was, and from Delverwood to Highwood. And he said to me, I've got some cold meat here for you. I said, yes. So there's a gang of us, what about four of us. Including myself, and they didn't know much about it, but then I knew the ins and outs of things, so I went down to the cookhouse and again a lot of the cold beef, you know, what they'd over, and filled it, put it in a sandbag, and carried this sandbag up the line with me. Well, when we took over the trenches from where we were, fairly quiet, and I said to them, what's his name there? His name was Maver, one was Fox. Jack Simmons. Jack Simmons with me, so it wasn't our turn to go into the trenches. Fairly deep trenches there, if they consider the Somme front. But so we got behind the trenches. It was a bit of open ground, a little shallow, you know, but pretty clear and full of water. But we got this cold meat, and I said, "Will you run a feed?" I said, "Because the cold meat, well, please," and these other three. So we sit down and. Got this cold meat, all the airs, of course, the old airs on the stack, and they don't to catch through the mud and that, but anyway, it's good. And while there, they started to send out what they call rifle grenades. That was a fire from a rifle, you know, they like little bombs on the end of the stick, and kill you or wound you, but I mean, they weren't no big explosion much. So while we're there, they started shedding their things, and some of them coming over where we were, three of the four of us. So suddenly one went off in the bed and fell in the yard from where we were and exploded. It was in a shell full of water. So I said, I doubt long there, these others, they weren't all new men, these were then the mother. So I said, one of us had been wounded with that. I said, we'd better go back undercover in the front in the trench. So the other, they got no equipment on, they left their equipment on the ground, you know. So they got up and put their equipment, one helped the other one. And this Simmons, he was short of them, he's a man about. All along then, that 45, I think he'd been a city waiter before he joined the army, was called up. And he turned around and held his arms up, so I was doing with his back and put his arms through his hip. And suddenly I heard, like that, I'd heard that too many times before. Looked over and said, I saw his eyes rolling. We'll try to get him to the ground, pull his coat on him. And when I do, he'd been shot through the. Oh, no, I hadn't got to the ground then. He shot through that part here, and the bullet had come out there.
Through the stomach and out of the back? Through the sort of left stomach?
Yeah, this part came out. He'd been shot through there, like there, and the bullet passed through his body, and it came out there. Now, I was touching him. I told him he was, you know, he's sitting on his feet. I tore his coat away and looked at his. I looked in his eyes and said, Jack, you're all right, and got him to the ground, but he's dead before he got to the ground. Well, he'd been shot through there, I told her. The bullet had gone right through him, blew all his intestines out here, and didn't touch me at all, and I was touching him. I was like that to him, just like that behind him. The bullet went through him, but I never got touched. So it must have been deflected somewhere, when it bone or something, you see, and because if they'd gone straight through, they couldn't have... But I could have did it. And he died there. And then from there we went to...
What was... Did the battalion suffer a lot of casualties during this period on the Somme?
We had a lot of casualties. Oh, yes, yes. We kept getting the reinforcements up from England. So that most men are strange. You didn't know many of me. So they kept coming and going. And
did you maintain the spirit of the regular battalion, even during this
period? Yes, that was always there, yes. There's some regular officers still there to come out. See, if they got reinforced, which maybe lost officers, we get reinforced by officers, mostly regular officers, young lieutenants are calling up the captain, that sort of thing. So they kept the regular battalion. So the spirit was still there. It wasn't the same spirit what there was in the early days, of course. It couldn't be. There's different sort of people, but the officers a bit different. But there was that kind of camaraderie, and there's no fear and that sort of thing. You went, if you were told to do a job, you've done. There's no hesitation and that sort of thing. You went, they were a good battalion. And from there, as you see, we went to the anchor. It wasn't too bad. We was on the tail end of Passchendaele.
So you weren't on the Ankh long before you went up to Passchendaele,
yes,
in the east?
Yes, about a fortnight or 3 weeks. About a fortnight. We didn't have many casualties there, just a few. Most of all was the condition, the mud and stuff like that. When we got towards Passchendaele, we never went in the attack of Passchendaele.
Well, I'm just thinking, because the Ankh was in October, November 1916.
Yes.
What did you do between then and, you see, Passchendaele is the Third Battle of Ypres, which started in the summer of 1917.
Well,
what did
there
you do before that?
Had been caught in Cambrai and back and forth over the top, all this, taking a few trenches, being driven back. It was just only trench warfare, that's all.
Is there anything special you remember about that period?
No.
Any incident?
We were going down in Havencourt Church. The Germans occupied this church and was using it for cover and having their meals there. And when we captured the church, it's all full of steaming hot coffee. they'd even take the bodies down with the shell, down from the shells, dead bodies, embalmed bodies, take them down, put them in the bottom, and lie, and use a bed and lie asleep. Germans haven't helped provide that. It's a blanket and stuff like that lying there when we captured it and captured them. They were.
When was that offensive?
That was about. Well, after the anchor. It was after the anchor, that was. From the time of the anchor and Passchendaele.
That's 17.
Yes. Well, then from then on, because we were in that attack of Cambrai.
Is that the one where you captured the church, you mean?
Abingdon Bay, the church, that was before, just after Passchendaele, that was. Then from then we went to the attack of Cambrai.
What do you remember about Passchendaele?
Well, I remember that we were, of course, pouring rain, wet, ever so wet, and that men were, we lost a lot of casualties, but men were engulfed in the mud and couldn't get out, and you know, it was a trip in mud and water, and so a lot of men died in the mud and water. They couldn't get them out. I mean, how could you get a wounded man out? A man badly wounded and thick mud and water, and you couldn't get to him even. So you were lying in partly dug trenches, hearing them crying out in front, and couldn't get anywhere near them. Couldn't get near them. But I didn't much about Passchendaele, that's all I consider about Passchendaele, well, the conditions really.
Yeah. Were you in any major attacks there? Hmm? Were you in any attacks there?
Well, yes, probably in fact, it was actually done with the main of the brigade, but we took some ground and they were driven out of some, that sort of thing, so we didn't make much headway there. You know, they'd be a map with nothing but mud and water and blood. I remember we got the some general came up while we were there, and I heard him say to one of our officers, he said, do you mean to say, he said, we sent men to die in this? He never knew themselves what it was like, the conditions, but they were bad. But when we got onto, as I asked that, onto the Cambrai, you know, because of
what do you remember about the Cambrai attack then? Well, was that the first time you'd seen tanks, or did you see the tanks at Cambrai?
Well, after Cambrai I saw the tanks, a place called Ashley Le Petit and Ashley Le Grand. That was doing it after the Cambrai, just well.
Stick to Cambrai then.
Yeah,
then.
Cambrai, we've driven back there, weren't we? You know, driven back for some time and went back for some miles there, and from then we. In the Berg line, I suppose, I don't know. But then we made an advance, we got a lot of reinforcements, and made an advance, and then that's when I first used the tanks, the tank battles. That was during after Battle of Cambrai, And I remember one occasion, this Ashley Le Petit and Ashley Le Grand was a camp where they, we called it the depot, but the base, camp base for tanks. And we picked up tanks up there and went in front of us, you know. And I remember attacking the railway line at Ashley Petit, and we got driven back from there. The railway line was raised above the ground, you know, when they sort of. And we got driven back badly. There was a lot of people there. I remember my officer left today, and he got killed there. Anyway, the. They sent for the tanks, and tanks took them. They took it, and when we took it off, the tanks had passed by. So, you know, they got between the sleepers and the line were all dug out, and the machine guns right along like that, the machine guns. And there's fellows there, Germans there, not exactly tied to their guns, but almost they've tied the line with their guns. They were trying to get away, and there's I suppose in fact every other opening under the sleepers. They got machine guns. It was high up, you know, so the attack was impossible to attack it. They sent for the tanks. You never got through it. It was like standing up there looking down at us for dancing.
What did you think of the tanks as a weapon?
Oh, I think they were wonderful, really. I think they were. Yeah. the feeling of they got a lot of help. Yeah, when you do the support them, you saw the tanks coming. You your mind was getting a lot of support from them. I saw them. Well, I saw. Yeah, where we were, but it was on the advance from Cambrai battle that they took some tanks. They got to get across a canal, a dry canal, you know, and the New Zealand engineers had built the bridge. Not fitted together, all marked, and when we captured it, they came up with these parts of the bridge of the transport, and bolted all together. The numbers on these, and formed built the bridge, and within about 24 hours, there was tanks going across it, and that's when we followed the tanks up. That's when they were useful, tanks there, but on the other part, there is a rhythm on the tank on the, I think this is on the Somme. I know where I was lying in the trench, the tank was trying to get across the trench, and they got hit and toppled over, and killed anyone in it. And then another occasion on the tanks, I was with them at Arras. I keep cutting Arras out. Arras in 1917, wasn't it? Now, that'd be full Passchendaele, was it? Yeah, I thought so. Full Passchendaele. That's where we went. That's where I went now from the Somme to whatever battle I was going on.
The Ancre.
Hmm?
To the Ancre.
The Ancre, yes. From the Somme to the Ancre. Ancre to Arras, that's right. That's where we remember Arras from. And I was the only in 1917, like first of all. I was before what I think I was. Sometimes I was before. Anyway, I know it was there Easter Monday, and we made an attack there, but you're just in their wire. They got 50 yards of barbed wire, and we hadn't cut it. We hadn't cut it properly, and we attacked, so we driven back. And I remember we got in the front line trench, and somebody shouted, and he said, look at old Sons, he's hanging on the wire, one of the fellas. She's wounded, hanging on the wire. So, a lot of course, a lot of wounded were there. And without any agitation, I'll get him in, he said. And he jumped up and he went about 50 yards in the open under German rifle fire and pulled him off that wire and brought him in. Nobody about it. I mean, these things are less than that. But
who was that who did that? Who was that who did that?
One of the men. Somebody said, look, I think it was Taylor. He said, look, old Taylor, that loot line wounded on the wire. Because there's a lot of dead there. But he was called an announcer, see. So this fellow, without any hesitation, he jumped up our trench, climbed up the top, and that's about 50 yards, I suppose, 100 yards, 50 yards, and pulled him off the wire and brought him back.
Now, as you moved right through to 1917 there, and all, the end of 17, you've been in a lot of attacks, a lot of big battles.
Mm-hmm.
You've been there since the start of 14. There weren't many left of the originals, if any. How did you feel about the war then? I mean, what did you put your survival down to?
Don't know. I thought sooner or later, the law of averages, I should have it. I was quite concerned. I wasn't concerned. I knew them well before then. Eventually I was to get something badly wounded or wounded. That was the only thing I worried about was getting blind, blown up or blind. The only thing I had really was blown up the field. And been blown up a few times. I told him one about Arras tonight. Was it Arras? We all got blown up in these. I said, we got killed. Forget this trench. Well, it was one of the best trenches you've been in, I should think. This is about something in the war beyond 20 years, then, you see.
This is at Sanctuary Wood.
Sanctuary Wood. And while we were there the night, and there was five in my bay, five in the next, and five along, like a five on the bay, each bay is five men, about longer than miles or so. And they got a pack of cutlery. It's a nice weather. That's the next we've been in. We've been in there about 24 hours. And one of them said, it's quite, it was quiet. They've got rifle fire, but no shell fire much. And they said, they've got a pack of cards in the next trench. They said, we'll go and have a game of cards with the other fellas. I knew all of them, of course. So the four went, it was my turn on duty. So I was left in my bay on my own. And these other four went into the five, made nine of them in the next bay, they were playing cards. Well, so, I'd been there about 10 minutes, and the fellas started firing above my head. Of course, from the German lines, I was sitting on the parapet in the back. And about there above my head, but I can't. I suppose every, well, less than a minute, he's put his iron rifle right in this in my sandbag above my head. And it wasn't touching me, but he was cutting the sandbag away, so that right beside of me, the earth out of the sandbag was falling to make a mole, making a heap there, but it's falling. So I thought, I didn't dare put my hand up there, you know. I thought, it'll bite it one there, all right, because he's hitting the same spot every time. But half the time he stopped, he didn't get nothing. So whether it's a fixed rifle, I don't know. But then our attendant started shedding at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon this day, and sending out shrapnel shells. And I said, well, as soon as we started, because they started. Wasn't long before they started, about 10 minutes or less than that. And they started sending over heavy shells. And I thought this was good. Well, they got so close, and the two of them dropped the other side of the trench, and two of them dropped this side. All of a sudden, the explosion. It blew me, honestly. It blew me the barbed wire, the sandbag. That's all. I don't know where the devil I went to. But I got down. I was all right. I was only dazed. And the trench was still partly intact. The parapet had gone, of course. So as I was lying there, a bit dazed, you know, a young officer came along, and he said to me, are you all right? I said, yes. So he said, where did that shell fall? I didn't know it fall. He said, you want to see your next bay? I said, well, mine, I said, they're all dead. He said, what, the nine of them? He said, yes. And that's only a foot from me. That's in the cage there, see. They killed one at nine, and yet I was there on my own, and a foot from that, you know what the bay's like, the difference, and it's more. And they killed every one of them, and then I feel that for one day, I kept on, I didn't get sick of anything.
What did you put your survival down to? Was it religious reasons?
No.
Did you have anything that you thought was keeping you alive?
No, I didn't know. I thought there's just that I was lucky and that sort of thing, you know. And sooner or later, you're going to come along to me. I should have it. And Fenders.
Did you get more nervous as the war went on?
A little bit, yes. A little bit. I did, I think, towards the last year. I think I did then. Not so much on the Somme front, I didn't, because there was too much, it was too many of you. Well, let's come to one another. But I used to like something to think about myself towards the last years. Like when you felt the moaning and grumbling, and there was some the French were shot, weren't they, for cowardice and all that sort. I was beginning to worry then about it a bit. But
in what way were you worried? Can you explain?
Worried?
What you were worried about? How were you worried? How did that affect you?
Well, you couldn't get much sleep, and you were sleeping nothing, and you got tired and that sort of thing, you know, you're weary, and in fact, there's sometimes you didn't care one way or the other. That sort of feeling.
And this started to happen. Whenabouts did you first start?
About the last year of the war. It seemed to drag on, you see, and I thought.
So after Passchendaele, into 1918.
After Passchendaele, yes. But during the Cambrai battle and doing what everything was. That wasn't. Over the top fighting like the Somme and Passchendaele was, Cambrai was more of an open fighting. You meet over open ground. So that, I did there sometimes, but I don't know what it was. I used to think something. We lost so many men there, so you don't think you could have wanted to put it down to.
Did you start to be more careful when you started feeling like that?
Yes. Or? Yes. You didn't take risks so much. As you did when you got that way, it seemed to be going on forever. You know, that sort of thing. It seemed so weary, and it seemed to be towards the end, the last year. There wasn't much heavy fighting and attack and that sort of thing the last few months. You got a bit weary of it. You thought, well, this is going on forever. That sort of thing.
What can you remember about the fighting in 1918?
The what?
The fighting in 1918.
1918. Well, it's more open fighting. When they retreated, when they fell back, you mean?
Well, there's a British retreat and then the German
yes.
retreat. What are there any stories or incidents you can call to mind?
Yes, on one occasion we driven them back, based for Solaim, S-O-L-E-M-E-S. And we attacked this village, a small town. And as we got into the town, to take it, and Germans were holding it, you see. This was on the way back to Germany, who were then. We attacked it, and what's amazed me is I got down the bend to go into the main street of this place. The Germans stood in it, it was fine. And on the corner was a van with an English name on it, selling such things as. Pies and cans, things like all that sort of thing. You see in the road in London a lot in those days. I forget what they call them now, but anyhow, it was, well, how the hell did they get there? So it must have been there before the war. So anyway, they left some hot coffee in there. We opened down a village street and they had to take this coffee and clean them off out of it. We had quite a few casualties because we were chasing down the main street of the town. They were turning around machine guns and sort of thing. Yes, it's amazing really that. You could hear these things smacking against the fence and that's all the pollution. That's you never. It is amazing, isn't it, really? I mean, I didn't seem to dodge anything at all. I didn't have time off or anything.
Did you feel more. You'd been used to being in trenches until Cambrai, at least. For 4 years, you'd been in the trenches. When you did move into open warfare, did you.
More freedom, yes. More open freedom. You felt as though you got more room to expand.
Do you prefer it?
Yeah, oh yes. When you're in the trenches, in the same spot each time and time again, back to the floor and back to the floor, the same outlook, looking over the top and waiting for the attack and that sort of business. But in the open, you cover more ground and you get it all together.
What about the lack of cover?
Well, you talk of cover, you could be like hedges, ditches, houses, and that sort of thing. You ran from one to the other.
So you didn't miss the trench
security? No. Didn't miss the cover, because you took what little cover you could, and you, of course, you threw yourself to the ground a lot. You didn't expose yourself much. We've seen, in peacetime, I've been taught a lot of that sort of thing, so I didn't expose myself too much. I'd get out of the way of it.